One other quick note. The KRFY online auction is coming up. It launches on the 27th, which is this Saturday. Right now, you can go to biddingforgood.com/KRFY. That's biddingforgood.com/KRFY. And check out the listing or the listings of what's available. I have been told this is the honest truth. A member of my own household took a look and said, this might be the best one ever. You guys really went all out this year. And I think that's true. You should check it out. biddingforgood.com/KRFY. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit more about the specific auction items available in the coming days, especially once it opens up on Saturday. But you can check it out, as I said, right now. The proceeds from the auction go to this radio station, Panhandle Community Radio, an independent, nonprofit community radio station that relies on your support to stay on the air. All right. I'll at this time throw it over to our interview that I recorded just yesterday with Drew Peterson about his film. It's again called Feel It All, and the date is October 2nd that you're going to be able to see it at the Panada Theater. Here we go in just a moment. I'm on the phone now with Drew Peterson, who is the filmmaker and subject behind the film Feel It All, which is going to be showing at the Panada Theater on October 2nd, which is a part of the Sandpoint Mental Health Awareness Week series of events and performances and films, including some other stuff at the Panada Theater. But Drew is joining us from, well, Drew, where are you calling from today?
I'm currently in Boise, Idaho, and I am psyched to be headed to Sandpoint next week.
Good. Hey, have you ever been here? Have you ever been this far north before?
I've never been to Sandpoint. I passed through North Idaho a couple times.
Yeah.
Had an ex-girlfriend who had roots up there, spent a little bit of time in Coeur d'Alene, and the closest I've skied to Sandpoint is probably Turner Mountain. If you've heard of that.
I'm sure our listeners will have heard of that. I'm not the best person to ask about the skiing scene in the region, but my next question is, how did you before we get into the deep background, how did you get hooked up with the Ethan Murray Fund and you know, how did this event come about?
Yeah, totally. Well, really, this event comes out of shared passion, first from the Ethan Murray Fund and Justine Murray for helping the Sandpoint community. And then my shared passion within that is that I've grown up deep within mountain culture my entire life. I've lived in mountain towns, and I've got roots all across the Mountain West. So I've re-engineered my life and my ski career in this mission of mental health awareness and suicide prevention, especially in mountain towns and the outdoor community at large. And through doing so and putting my films out online and speaking publicly about this, Justine found me, reached out to me, and I could tell that she had the level of passion that I thrive on and that I seek out in the people that I work with. And, you know, if she loves that community that much, then it means that I better get up there and come meet y'all and do what I can to, you know, do what I'm doing across the rest of the Mountain West.
Yeah. Let's do a little background on you for people who haven't heard your name before. What was your, outside of this specific film, I guess, what's your background? Who's Drew Peterson?
Yeah, I wear a lot of different hats. Most people know me as a professional skier and an ultra runner. Mm-hmm. But that's just what I do athletically. I'm also a storyteller, filmmaker, writer, public speaker, but really I'd rather be defined by what I care about, my values, and how I act in the world and in my community and for myself. And that's really come about through this personal mission mental health awareness and suicide prevention. So I grew up in Colorado, but like I said, I got roots all across the Mountain West and, kind of further in that. And it's really fun because now when I get to connect with communities and really, I guess my identity is more built on this work than just sliding down snow, even though I do still ski professionally.
Okay. I was going to, you're also, as you just mentioned, you're also a trail runner, and that's where, if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of that forms, I guess, kind of the structure of the film, Feel It All.
Yeah. So Feel It All follows me running the Leadville 100, an iconic 100-mile ultramarathon in my home mountains in Colorado. But to learn the course, I ski the peaks around the course. And then we use the story arc of the race itself to tell my personal mental health journey. And it really centers around a goal that helped me get through the worst depressive and suicidal episodes of my life. I used to tell myself that if I can make it through this, if I can make it through today, wake up to see tomorrow, then I can do absolutely anything. I can climb any mountain, I can ski any line, and I can run 100 miles. And that goal became a lifeline. And now it's become so much more than that. And my mental health journey continues, but it's really powerful to get to share this chapter in a lot of different ways, especially through the film.
Yeah. You ran 100 miles for the Leadville Ultramarathon trail run. Sorry, I'm not a runner myself. I might get some terminology mixed up. Was that your longest trail run? Was this something new for you to do this kind of thing, or is this just the race that you chose? It could have been any other of similar races.
Well, Leadville's especially meaningful to me because I grew up about 40 miles north of there in a town called Silverthorne, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So I grew up remembering Leadville weekend coming around every summer. Mm. And so it's a race that captured my imagination since I was really young. So it's also been a lifelong goal. And now I've ran 6 100 milers and it still holds a lot of meaning for me, but that meaning evolves and changes. And Leadville's still a special place in my heart. I just ran it again last month.
It's a film. I guess we can talk about the film in a couple different ways. It's a film about mental health. It's also an outdoor film, an adventure film. I mean, it's a documentary. What the process of actually doing it? You're the director. You're also the subject. Who else? How many people does it take to, to put this whole thing together? What was the process like of filming all of these? Everything that goes into it.
Yeah, it's admittedly a pretty run and gun style of filmmaking, especially when we're out there in the mountains, especially on the ski side. So I've got my co-director Jesse Levine, and he and I really partnered on a lot of this project. He was the main cinematographer for all the ski footage that we shot. Mm-hmm. And of course, that means that he also skied all those peaks around the course. We had a bunch of guys help out shooting the race and shooting some kind of behind the scenes stuff. And really it becomes kind of a product of the community. But really it's me, my co-director Jesse, and then our editor, Tyler Boyd. And it was really special also to do this film project with them because with the topic, with the subject matter of mental health, it was really special to get to create a film with two other emotionally intelligent men who care about these things and want to help others through doing so.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about what else? We've got the film, which is going to show at when the film shows at the Panada. What else does that evening entail? Do you know? You'll be there. Will there be a Q&A?
Yeah. So I look at these events as a community celebration of mental health. So next Thursday, October 2nd, at the Panada, we're going to be screening the film first. Following that, I'm going to give a keynote talk that I call "My Story is the Story of Our Community." Because much of my path also exemplifies the mental health and suicide crisis in the American West, but also how we can change that and shift our culture on mental health. And we'll wrap it up with a Q&A so that there's some community conversation and it brings it back home for everybody in Sandpoint. We're also going to have a bunch of resources available there. You're going to be able to connect with the Ethan Murray Fund, and all the ticket proceeds go to support their therapy scholarship program so that this impact can continue on in the community more than just one night.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. We love the Ethan Murray Fund up here and all the good work that they do. You, some of this is, I'm sure, going to kind of appear in the film, and so I don't know, no intent to spoil it, but you've kind of found that part of your mental health journey and improving your own mental health is in some way related to these activities, being in the outdoors and doing these, you know, challenging yourself with some of these experiences. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's definitely a part of my mental health journey, but it's also not the only thing. And so skiing and running used to be my only coping mechanisms, but I also used them as an escape and a way to try to not feel this reality that was existing within inside me. And so the film, and a lot of my story that I'll share in the talk as well, is an evolution from running away to running to. And really, that's because I've built a healthier relationship with myself, take care of myself in more holistic ways. And that opens up skiing and running to just be one part of what I call my mental health toolkit. And it makes them a lot more fun, too.
Yeah. So
that's the best part of all this in terms of the skiing and running and recreation and connection to the outdoors.
Oh, that's very interesting. I mean, that it's not, that to some extent, it was an escape, which I think so many of us can relate to, that getting outside, doing something fun in the outdoors can kind of take your mind off of things in a good way. But it sounds like to some extent for you, it was, as you just said, to restate what you just said, it was a way of running away from kind of your problems in real life in maybe not such a healthy way at certain points in your life.
Yeah, and it grows and changes and evolves, but part of it is just building a healthier relationship with those things. And like I said, it's just part of the mental health toolkit. So I can lean on those tools when I need them. They're the right tool for the job.
Yeah. Do you think, every story is its own, is unique. We're all different people, but do you think that you're among the kind of the community of professional athletes and also just extreme kind of distance runners and things? Do you think that your story is similar to kind of the other, to any other people? Is this a common theme that you find with people who really want to physically challenge themselves, that they might be trying to, escape from certain feelings or certain, you know, things that go on in the quote unquote real world by getting out of it and doing extreme, being through extreme physical acts? What do you think?
I think there's definitely some correlation there.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I'm careful with how I talk around that, because there's a lot of people who also have healthy relationships with these sports. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who are on different spots in their journey of what that sport or what recreation means to them and is, you know, in their toolkit. So it is different for everyone. But I think, like, the biggest thing that comes through in my story and the way that I share it is that it's in a way that it can be relatable to other people. So yes, on the surface, that connects first and foremost with the ski community and the ultra running community, but it goes much further than that, because it's really just a human story. And so I hear all the time from people who aren't runners, who aren't skiers, who aren't you know, wouldn't self-identify as athletes. And they say that they see themselves in my story and that I put words to something they've never been able to explain before. And so I think that's some of the beauty in it, you know. And it also makes it go way beyond sport, even though that's the entry point.
Do you find there was there any key or any one thing that that did start to make things better for you? I think it's safe to say you're in a better place now than you were. I guess I don't know when exactly the time frame of the film, but was there any particular moment or anything that happened that you said, I need to, you know, that things started to get better for you?
Yeah, the reality of mental health, no matter who it is, and, you know, taking into account the uniqueness of everyone's situation, there's a lot of different things mm-hmm. that come into play. For me, it's been a multi-year journey. Really, the film centers around my story of the really immediate 5 years after I had a near-death accident in the mountains, mm-hmm. and that forced me to seek help. And eventually grow and change and evolve, finally being diagnosed with some of the things that I was going through, get treatment, and really change, evolve, and re-engineer my whole life. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of different stuff in there, but I think of some of this in inflection points, turning points. And the biggest one along that path was asking for help. Yeah. I got to a point where I needed to ask for help, and I think one of the messages that I try to pass on to people is that the earlier we ask for help, the easier it's going to be. And the more we ask for help, we're giving permission for those around us to do the same thing. And that really is at the core of what's going to shift culture and what's going to help us as individuals too.
I know our time is short here. This is at least your second movie. You explored similar themes in a movie called Ups and Downs, and the movie that you're showing on Thursday at the Panada is called Feel It All. Is there going to be a third? Or are you working on something else in the right now or in the future?
Oh man, I don't have another film in the works right now. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a lot of different things right now. I'm growing the impact of this film, primarily through in-person experiences and live events, because I think in-person experience have a lot of power to shift culture and be something that sticks with people for years to come. I am working on writing a book, and the more I say that out loud, the more committed I get. So, just for me, it's a real passion in sharing stories and telling stories in a way that can help other people.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess last details of the event. It's the film is about 35 minutes long, but the event is an evening. You'll be there to give after the event, after the film, there'll be a talk and then a Q&A. So, it's at the Panada Theater. Doors open at 6 for a 7 PM showtime. And expect about 2 hours of a 2 hour long event, give or take, I guess, with Drew Peterson, who directed and is the featured subject of the film. More to say, Drew, in our last couple minutes here, anything else you want to let people know either about the event or just in general?
The biggest thing that I'd like to say is that I'd love to see all fabric and wavelengths of the community there. Love to see all ages and all sorts of different people. To show up to this event means that you care about your community. It can also just mean that you want to go watch cool skiing and running film. But I think that's how we create a shift, is by all showing up together. So I look forward to connecting with the Sandpoint community. And I guess I got to come back in the winter to go skiing too.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's what I hear anyway. I'm not a skier myself, but that's what you're supposed to do here. I think I'm the only person here who doesn't ski, as far as I know. Drew
hey,
Peterson,
there's more to life than skiing. I'll say it myself.
Yeah.
But thanks for having me on, Jack.
Drew, thank you. We'll let you go off to your next thing. It's I always struggle to talk about mental health issues. So thanks for putting up with my kind of fumbling conversation style. But it's an important thing to talk about, and I'm looking forward to the showing at the Panetta Theater on October 2nd.
For sure, that's the point of it.
Cool.
Practice talking about it so that we can normalize it. Thanks a bunch, Jack.
Yeah, thank you, Drew. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. That was Drew Peterson, and you can see him at the Panetta Theater on October 2nd, where he'll be presenting his film, Feel It All, a benefit for the Ethan Murray Fund. And in just a moment, we'll be talking to Sean Boehm, the board president of that theater, the Panetta, and we'll talk about what's going on over there, construction or reconstruction or however you call it, and everything else. Carrie Logan is here as well. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Uh-oh. You're on mic three. What are you doing over there? Okay, say that again.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Yes, nice to have you here. On this date in 1965, a TV show premiered that I had never heard of before. It appeared on ABC TV in the U.S., and it was the first cartoon show featuring cartoon portrayals of real living people.
I was a newlywed. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to TV.
The Beatles. The TV
really?
Show The Beatles.
Oh,
it was a cartoon show that ran for three seasons on ABC on Saturday mornings, and the first episode premiered on this date 60 years ago.
Oh, my.
How about that? And it was called I Want to Hold Your Hand. We're going to play that, and then we'll be back talking Panetta with Sean Boehm in just 2 minutes and 26 seconds. The Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand. As I said, that's the title track from the first episode of the Beatles cartoon, which began airing in 1965 on this date, 60 years ago. We're here now in the studio with Sean Boehm. He's the board president for the Panetta Theater, the beautiful historic Panetta Theater, which is a nonprofit organization that runs that theater right in the middle of First Avenue here in downtown Sandpoint. Lots going on at the Panetta these days.
Lots going on.
Let's start with the reason for your visit is to give us an update on the reconstruction going on the North Wall.
Yes, correct. Reconstruction's a strong word. It's rehabilitation and restoration. Yes,
okay.
There's no reconstruction.
Okay.
We started that at the beginning of September, thanks to a $100,000 grant from the Idaho Heritage Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Foster Klein was instrumental in getting that for us, and we're super appreciative of that. So Greg Marsters with Custom Plaster LLC, he's the same artisan who did the ceiling of the theater 15 mm-hmm. years ago or 10 years ago, whatever it was. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But he's been working on that north wall, which was sadly in need of restoration. It was covered in smoke from a fire years ago next door. The glaring difference between the north and south wall is pretty obvious now with what we've done. I do come here with some bad news, though. The sick chicken, which we tried to retain, is no more.
Oh, no.
I know. I got to let it out there. People are going to find out. The intention was to try to remove the sick chicken in one piece because that part of the wall was actually delaminating. It did not happen the way the repair was done. Part of it was stuck to the wall. The other part just sort of crumbled off. The good news is underneath, Greg was able to uncover a good portion of the original 1927 artwork, which has now been faithfully restored back to original look. So it's,
well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, the purest form of restoration was back to the original form. We do have the sick chicken was traced with Mylar, real intricate color samples were taken. We have all the data we need to actually reproduce it. So at some point, we're going to reproduce it in an art piece. And okay. The sick chicken will still have a place of honor at some point. But
we need to, okay, back up just a little bit. I think in this room, obviously, based on Carrie's gasp of disappointment when you said that, we all know what the sick chicken is. But this is really a... How did it come about? This is a piece of the wall that was different than all the other pieces of the wall.
So the story is as varied as you'd imagine, and is mm-hmm. probably pretty made up, which I think a lot of stories in Sandpoint are and have taken on their own life. Basically, there was damage to the wall. The story is they hired a mason to repair the plaster. Mm-hmm. The mason repaired the plaster. He asked for his money. The Panada politely declined and said, "You didn't paint the wall."
Mm.
Argument ensued. He painted the wall, but he painted the wall very haphazardly, and the lovely birds that are on the Panada wall became a sick chicken, a bird mm-hmm. throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
Always seemed odd that they would pay him after that, but that's how the story went. And mm-hmm. yeah, so we tried to save it. Did not happen, but we will reproduce it at some point. We will still have a place of honor at some place inside the Panada.
Okay. That is too bad. Okay, you mentioned that this was not a reconstruction. It was a rehabilitation, but it wasn't. This is more than just a paint job, too.
Correct. So there's scaffolding been up there. We've moved the seats. What the process is, and I'm going to keep it really basic. Greg mm-hmm. is really good at what he does. Basically, they use sound technique. They tap on the wall from front of the theater all the way back, floor to ceiling. They look for any imperfections, any spot that delamination is happening, cracks. Mm-hmm. They secure the wall back to the main substrate. They inject different materials into cracks, and then they only paint areas to restore. They clean the whole thing, and it's not an overpaint. We're one of the few theaters in Idaho and a great example of pretty much untouched interior in a lot of ways on the paint on the walls. So we really wanted to keep that. So it's not just a fresh paint coat of everything. They meticulously touch up everything that needs touching up, and everything else just got cleaned. So, And he uses great materials that are designed to last a long time, a lot better than the materials that were used originally or in the sick chicken reconstruction. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so the substrate is like a lath and plaster that they...
Yeah, that they put plaster on. This is where I'm going to sort of bow out of the details because of Greg's hearing. He may fly through the window. He's very into how it's done, and my knowledge of it's pretty rudimentary.
Huh.
But I do know you walk in the theater, and if you look to the south side and you look at the north side, you can tell a dramatic difference in color, in brightness, everything. He's done a great job.
Wow.
That, I guess, begs the question of what are you going to do with the south wall?
Well, the south wall is some of the next things we're going to do. So a lot's been going on at the Panada, and I'm going to sort of become a broken record somewhat. This is mm-hmm. my debut of what people are going to hear. So, in 1985, a group of women got together, three ladies. They raised the money to buy the theater with the community's help. The community got behind it, and 10 years later, they burned the mortgage, and the community owns the Panada. Since that point, in my estimation, the community sort of sees the Panada there, but we forgot about it in a way. The physical structure. The physical structure is in dire need of help in a lot of ways, from deferred maintenance and other plans. We want to expand it to make it a more modern facility. We're under a 10-year historic preservation easement with Idaho Heritage Trust with acceptance of that grant for the south wall or for the north wall.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to maintain the interior of the theater exactly as it is. We have to. There's a lot of big things we want to do. One of them is the south wall. The south wall, if you walk down the alley between Zero Point and the Panada, the wall is the stucco on the outside is coming up. We're dealing with water penetration into that wall, which is going to damage the south mm-hmm. wall. So we need to raise money to have the outside of the south wall repaired first to make the building watertight, and then we can get grants, and we're looking for private donations as well to do the same kind of work on the interior of the south wall. And the inside of the theater is going to look a lot better. And there's plenty more to do in there, but that's just the start of it.
Mm-hmm.
With the departure of the last ED, as chairman of the board, I sort of had to reflect, okay, what's going on here? Why does this keep happening to the Panada? I've had questions from the community, everything from, the Panada's cursed to it's in the walls of the Panada. That's mm-hmm. just the way it is.
It is haunted.
It's definitely haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in there alone, and I can attest to that.
But, yeah.
We'll get into that another time, paranormal experiences. But anyway, so me and the board got together, and we decided, like, hey, what's going on? Well, the Panda, we feel, has just been doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And we know what the definition of that is insanity. Mm-hmm. We keep expecting other things to change. We need to start educating the public about what's happening to the building, what the needs are, and we need some serious money to raise to keep the building where it's at. We don't want to lose it. We don't want to see developers take it over at some point. We don't want to see it fall into a museum of disrepair. So we're starting with the north wall. We're also going to be redoing the seating in the balcony. We're going to retain some of the love seats. There's also going to be new seating that gets put up there, more modern seating. We have lobby plans. We're currently in design for a new woman's bathroom in the southwest corner, the old retail space of the photography studio that was there. That's going to be an expanded women's bathroom, which I think the women of Sandpoint should rejoice in. The four stalls of the current women's bathroom is tough when there's 500 people in the theater. But yeah, we're really going to be coming out to the community. We're revising Century Fund goals, which has been pretty successful, but the numbers are far too low for the work we need to get done. So we're working with a local architect. We're in talks with a local builder for a lot of the work that needs to be done. I was down in Boise with the vice president of the board, Charlotte, and we met one-on-one with the Murdoch Grant Group, which gives out large grants for this kind of work. So we're really hopeful that the money's going to come in, but we're going to be reaching out to the community, corporate donors, large private donors. You know, we're talking some large money is going to be needed, and we're going to have to all come together again as a community and really, you know, save the Panda for the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. We have an opportunity to really turn the corner on this place and get it in a good physical condition to where people can maintain the structure as opposed to try to repair what's there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a friend off the air the other day just about if the goal of the Panda was just to... If the Panda was just an organization, just a community arts organization whose goal was to furnish a venue somewhere in downtown Sandpoint that could put on shows of various kinds for the community, and it was a business, probably the prudent thing to do would be to tear the building down and start over. But that's not what the Panda is. The Panda is also a historic preservation effort. It's two things at once. It's a preservation of the historic Panda structure and the beautiful building that it is, but also you're trying to put on you're trying to bring entertainment locally and of a national caliber to the Panda Theater and put on shows of artistic merit for this small town that might not otherwise get here, or for this region really. When you're hiring a new ED, you're hiring now, as you said, the PAN has been going through some trouble, and you're hiring your fourth ED within 5 years, I think.
Correct.
Do you think that are you looking for somebody who's focused on one part of that or the other, or?
Yeah, really, what's important for the hiring committee currently in the board is we need an executive director that understands the PAN as a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. We're one of the only nonprofit that has a building. It has a historic building, a 100-year-old building that we need to maintain and expand on. We need to get modern facilities in there for modern productions. We definitely want someone business-minded. Applications are open for one more day till tomorrow, the 26th, and we've had about eight applicants so far, and we've already started interviewing. First round interviews, and we've had some good potential, but we're looking for someone that's business minded that can run the Panda as a business. Arts background's great too, and we can support that as well, but we have to turn the Panda into a profit making nonprofit. You know, the money has to come in to be able to do what we want to do. The Panda's mission is, you know, historic preservation, presentation of local shows, all that stuff. Well, we have to make money so that local nonprofits can use the theater at an affordable rate. Currently, that's slowly shifting as we're having to raise prices based on costs just to maintain the place. We're having new HVAC put in, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning mid-October sometime it's going to happen, and that's costing us $125,000. Wow. We're looking at a lobby expansion that's probably in the $1.5 million range. We're looking at tying in the Little Theater, which we own as well, which mm-hmm. the community owns as well. When I say we, I mean the community. It's the Panada Theater Community mm-hmm. LLC that owns it. And there's a space behind the Little Theater and the main theater that we want to build a structure for office space and to tie the Little Theater into the main theater. That's going to be a three-story building, probably something like that. We don't have design mm-hmm. on that. But the board is super motivated. We want an executive director that's super motivated. You know, I had a business coach that told me that the owner of the business is the lid on the business, and the business will never get past where the owner's at. I believe that's what the Panada has been. Mm-hmm. The Panada has never been able to get past the current ED or the current board. Egos, different things have taken place throughout the years. I've really tried hard to get away from that and really get a space of, okay, what can we do in the next 2 to 5 years to really put us in a place to be super successful for the next 100 years. I know that's a big goal and a big dream. And, you know, the money's in this community for it. I know it's out there. We need stakeholders to come forward that are interested in it. I'll be able to talk to people. We're going to be meeting with corporations, local corporations, like I talked about, local large profit or large donors. And, you know, we need the help that this community's gave in 1985. It's time again. And the Panada has given a lot of love out. And it's time we give some love back to the old girl. She needs some help. She's great inside, but there's a lot of stuff we want to do to turn it into a modern facility to where people are coming from Coeur d'Alene and Spokane to see shows. Something that mm-hmm. people in Sandpoint have a premier destination to go see entertainment. That local kids have a place to do their dance recitals. Local musicians have stuff to do. Local nonprofits can afford to use a really top-notch theater. It's a unique thing for a town this size.
Mm. You mentioned possible expansion, tying in the Little Theater.
Correct.
I spend some time in the Little Theater myself, and I know we've talked about that before on the airwaves. I think we talked about the results of that survey yeah. that you put out into the public.
Yeah, the community. There was a overwhelming is a strong word, but there was an overwhelming choice to go through into the Little Theater, basically where the concession stand is now. Take that out, open up that doorway.
Where the concession stand in the Little Theater is now?
The concession stand in the main theater.
In the main theater, that would pass through.
Okay. Yeah, you would pass through. That would open to a general gathering area, which would open into the Little Theater. Mm-hmm. And it would be collapsible to where large events, it can be opened up for more space. Mm-hmm. Smaller events, we could close it down to where you'd be back in a little tighter venue for the Panada. We've also added a mobile bar down at the front of the theater as well to sort of relieve some of that congestion for all you beer and wine drinkers and water. They have water too. But that'll be down at the front of the theater. We started that on the night of Viggo Mortensen, which was a great night.
Yeah.
And it was really successful. So, and I better not forget this before I forget it, is Sunday, October 5th, I promised I would talk about this, is take three where Bach Meeks Rock. Look online at the Panada. It's mm-hmm. Sunday, October 5th at 7 p.m. It's going to be an amazing show. Tickets are available. It's three ladies. Look on the Panada's website. There's a lot of good stuff. They have great videos of what these women do. They're great musicians, and it's going to be a great night. So I promised our production group back at the office I would mention that, and if I don't, they will kill me. It's true. It's scary there. They're very scary people. Uh-huh. I do want to get a shout out to the staff and the board. During this interim period where we're without an executive director, the staff has stepped up tremendously. Caitlin, Doug, Brendan, and Karen have all stepped up and really kept the theater going. Woody and Charlotte really are the top two people from the board currently that are helping bridge that gap to the new executive director, while I'm handling some hiring stuff with Amy as well. And the other board members are doing a great job. So, but yeah, we're working with Chris Bessler on redesigning the goals of the Century Fund. We're almost capped out on that. Ting's done a great job of matching. We're at $180,000. I think the community has donated to that, and Ting has matched that money. $200,000, I believe, is the cap on that. So we're going to mm-hmm. be looking for a new sponsor of that. And like I said, large donors.
Mm-hmm. You're revising that number, the goal up Not down.
No. No, definitely not down. The board's in position for momentum. We're going to seat a new executive director that sees the vision. We're putting policies and procedures. I mean, I was amazed that the Panada has this many years has gone on with no policies, procedures. It's just sort of everything has been said. Well, that's just how we've always done it. Mm-hmm. Well, I own a business and it's tough to own a business or run a business without direction from anybody. And anybody that comes in there sort of just floats in the direction they want. And I think that's why the Panada sort of sat in limbo. It's no disrespect to anybody that's held board positions or executive director positions in the past, but we have not seen any forward momentum in the building. What happens with that in our estimation is, you know, donors get hesitant to donate money. You know, if it's a flat organization, they're not going to donate money. When we met with the Murdoch Foundation that donates hundreds of millions into the billions of dollars in the Northwest to organizations, they only want to work with businesses that are financially viable, financially rising, all nonprofits they deal with, but they need to see actual business structure involved. And the Panada has not really had that. So we're putting a lot of that in place behind the scenes. We're revising bylaws, policies, procedures, safety plan. How do we get people out of the building? Charlotte with the board is meeting with the fire department and the local police department is being super helpful on that. We're really getting the place modern as much as possible. And, you know, we want to keep the forward momentum and really revitalize the building and get people excited about the Panada. I know I'm excited about it and I know a lot of people are, but I think there's a lot of people. I have people walk in there that a young lady that works with me grew up in Sandpoint. She went in the Panada probably 4 months ago, 5 months ago. It was the first time she'd ever walked in the place.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
She grew up not 10 blocks away probably. So obviously we're missing some people.
Yeah. It is always interesting when you, yeah, when you find out that it's, you, like, for example, talking about the sick chicken, we know it.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. It's something we know very well, but I'm thinking about our listeners and I'm like, you know, there's probably somebody listening who's never even been in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The, you mentioned that, you know, you mentioned the importance of having a business plan. This is going to fall to the executive director, obviously, but in your mind, what portion of the general operating of the Panada Theater as a business will come from like the revenue generated by ticket sales?
Basically, these are just generic numbers, but yeah, Woody, who's the treasurer, schools us on it. He's very good with finances. Basically, one out of every $3 that the Panada needs has to come from an outside source. Grants or fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, mostly our ticket prices are almost a break even usually on a lot of the events. Sometimes we lose money on the events if the Panada puts it on themselves and we don't get enough ticket sales.
Yeah.
Concessions are where most theaters make a lot of their money. That's why we're going to expand the concessions offerings or at least make them easier to acquire. We're revising a lot of that stuff. The pricing structure, prices haven't changed in the Panada forever. How tickets are sold, everything. Mm-hmm. Everything is up for revision right now. We've got to change how we do business down there. You know, it's just, I was amazed. We had one show, it was last winter, I believe. We walked in, the theater was like 40 degrees. The heating had stopped because belts had been shredded because no one was paying attention to just routine maintenance. Luckily, we were able to get a hold of the old facilities guy who happened to know how to do it to fix the belts. And we were able to get the heat on for a performance that night. So, you know, we just can't operate like that. We owe more to the building. We owe more to the founding, the Panada moms, the ladies that put the time into it. We owe it more to the community to do better. You know, my daughter danced there. There's little kids that dance there, you know, all the time. We have people come back that say their first experience ever in theater and arts was there. You know, a lot of that stuff's not being supported fully by the school districts anymore because of financial cuts. Organizations like ours, the Festival at Sandpoint's involved with this as well, can bring those arts to schools and to give the kids the space to have that. It's super important for kids.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really agree with you about developing the policies, procedures, paying attention to all those infrastructure needs, because there is a sense, I think, in the community, at least I've always had the sense, that the Panada was kind of run as a, I'm going to say club, but, you know, like a social thing. It was just like, you know, if you know, type thing.
Yeah, you were either in or you weren't in. And when I first got on the board, I definitely felt that I picked that up at my first event that I went to when I was a board member. Once I knew who a lot of the people were, I was like, oh, this is their clubhouse, and this is where they hang out, and this is where they do stuff. Mm-hmm. And they did a great job for a lot of years, and the Panda is still there, and that attests to everybody that's been there.
Right, but what it does is makes it all dependent on those people, you know. Correct. A very select small group, which you can't have. You have to have a wider circle, a wider family to take care of it.
We have a great volunteer team there that really keeps us going. A lot of the volunteers really run the place. The volunteer cleaning crew, the concession people are all volunteer, but they'll be the first one to tell you, you know, they're not spring chickens anymore.
Right.
And honestly, there's not a lot of 16-year-olds walking in the place that want to volunteer at the Panda. We need to change that. We need to get a younger demographic in there. We need to wake up the community of what's happening there and what can be done. And we need people to buy in. And buy in financially and buy in emotionally. You know, every donation helps, time helps, and just get interested in and talk to people about what's going on. I think the Panda has sort of just become a fixture on the corner. It's like, oh, there's that cool theater, but we could lose it. You know, I'm not saying we're in danger of that at this moment, but, you know, if we don't change how we're doing things with the pressure that development has in the city, with the city's policies that's changed over time, where the support's coming from the theater locally, we don't always know. So we need the community to step in, and, you know, the financial makeup of the socioeconomic makeup of the Sandpoint has changed dramatically in the last 10 years and really in the last 5 years. We need to enlist those people and say, hey, you're here, you're part of this community, and this is a super important part of the community. And, you know, I hate to keep saying money, but it really takes money.
Let's say somebody is listening right now and wants to get involved. Perhaps financially, but maybe just as a volunteer, or what are the opportunities for people who aren't already in the Panda family to kind of come and join it?
Yeah, the best bet is just to go to Panda. I think it's panada.org, Panada's website. Mm-hmm. There are links, I believe, to volunteer. If not, if you go to About Us, there are the board members listed there. Mm-hmm. My wonderful picture is on there with my email. And I even put my glasses on for it to try to look like I knew what I was doing. hopefully it's fooling some people. But yeah, you can email me directly. And that's the best way really to get involved.
Yeah. There is a volunteer sign up form on the website. I can confirm if you go to support us, it goes right to one of the options is to become a volunteer and sign up right there.
Yeah, and volunteers, the benefits of that is you're helping out the Panda, and also the events you volunteer for, you can go and watch the show for free.
Yeah.
So
this is, you can either be part of the cleanup crew, you can be concessions, you can sell tickets or check in people at the box office.
We have positions all over the place, and you can volunteer to be on committees. There's volunteers that just join committees to do stuff, finance, community outreach, facilities, whatever your interest is, you can do that as a community member.
Well, let's see. Should we talk a little bit about if the way people want to get involved at the Panda is to go and see a show coming up tomorrow? The Pondery Arts Council is putting on Sean Bostrom, piano player.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be in the theater a couple weeks ago. He was in there just listening to the piano. I didn't even know who he was, or, you know, I knew he was coming, but I didn't realize who that was because it was so early. He sounded amazing. Mm-hmm. POAC's a great organization. Dino and Tone over there do a great job, and we're really excited to maintain a partnership with them.
Yeah, most of their performing arts series ends up being performed at the Panda, I think.
It does, yeah. And it's a great series, and every one of those shows is unique, and they really do a great job of curating those.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next weekend, you got Feel It All, which we spent the first portion of this hour talking about, but that's on Thursday, October 2nd. It's a benefit for the Ethan Murray Fund, and it is the director, Drew Peterson, will be there to discuss. He'll give a little talk and then do a Q&A after the show. And that's part of a mental health weekend. The North Idaho or the Sandpoint Mental Health Awareness Week is, I think, the series of events.
Yeah, it's a great thing that the Panda does for the community. Mental health is a serious issue in all communities, and in ours as well. And it's great that we have that space to have larger events where people can come together and have serious discussions.
You have the following day, Friday, October 3rd, a week from tomorrow, you have Miriam Feldman coming. This is just a donation-based event put on by NAMI Far North, a candid mental health hour with Miriam Feldman, Breaking Barriers and Building Hope. And then you already mentioned Take Three, where rock.
I expect to see everybody there. We have 480 seats available.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how many we've sold so far, but we want to fill that place. These ladies are pretty good.
Cool.
So they're instrumentalists and singers?
It's instrumentalists, yeah. So you can go online and look at the videos of it. It's they play classical music. They play modern versions of classical or modern songs as well. But strings, and they're really talented ladies dancing and playing, and it looks, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask then about there's other events coming up, including the Rocky Horror Picture Show and
costume contest, and we will have bags of things to throw around. You get to dirty the little theater, you get to dirty the main theater. The cleaning crew is going to crucify us, but we've got to do it. It was a great event last year.
A number of ski films. We are coming into the season. The ski films at the Panada are always popular. It's a great place to go see an outdoor.
If you want to get your stoke on and watch people shred the gnar.
And you have.
Dude.
Totally.
And then the annual membership meeting is Thursday, October 16th. Who can attend this annual membership meeting?
People that are members of the Panada.
And that means?
That means a lot of things. Yeah. If you've donated money, if you've attended events, if you look online under the bylaws, there's a definition of the membership that honestly is pretty vague.
Yeah.
No one's checking IDs at the door. Anybody at the community at this point can probably come down. Unfortunately, you're going to have to listen to me probably drone on again about these same kind of topics. But like I said, I'm going to be pretty relentless in pushing this vision forward for the team.
Mm-hmm. And you're putting that on in the, you're going to do that in the big theater?
It's in the big theater, yeah. We're not going to be sitting on the stage, though. We're going to be sitting in front of the stage this year. It always seems like this great separation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a million people there, and we're sitting up on this stage. I like to keep things a little tighter, more intimate.
Yeah. We are almost out of time here this morning. You're listening to The Morning Show on Panhandle Community Radio. Sean Boehm has been our live guest, and thanks to Drew Peterson, who called in and talked to us about his film, Feel It All, which is going on at the Panada. Well, Sean, before we sign off, I guess anything else in conclusion, in closing?
I just want to thank you guys for giving us a space to talk about this. We're going to be checking in probably once a month or so with progress on where we're going. And just, you know, I look forward to speaking to everybody in the community, and I know the love that Sandpoint has for people and just helping out. And it's time that the Panda needs the help. So I look forward to beginning that process with everybody.
Okay. Carrie, thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Nice to see you.
Anything both. New in your life you want to share?
Nope. Just, what I told you this morning, we're on baby watch. My second oldest grandson and his wife are in labor and delivery right now, waiting for that baby girl to come out. So,
holy cow, congratulations.
Thank you. It's the first great grandchild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Too young. You're too young to be a great grandmother.
Oh, bless you.
It's true. Okay, it's time for Bird Note. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderé.